life.
Take two.
Although that means nothing to most people.
Well, no, I know. But I'm about to explain it after we tell them that this is a podcast of the cinema.
This is literally a knife, a podcast of the cinema. It's very early on a Saturday morning.
It is.
And there's a reason for that.
We'll be getting to all that shortly.
No, do it now.
Well, first, I'm going to mention that
they know who you are already.
Big movie this weekend. We could be getting new listeners. You never know.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick.
I think all those people who are into IRS are going to be running out to this podcast.
Yes. On the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
Oh, I'm Dave White.
Yes.
I'm also a film critic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very real and accomplished film critic.
You are in no way three children wearing an overcoat and a hat pretending to be an adult.
I'm a film critic with movies.com.
Hooray.
Congratulations.
You did it.
Congratulations, movies.com.
For hiring you.
You've had me for a very long time. The countdown begins.
Heck yeah. So, yeah, this is our second attempt to tape this podcast this weekend. The original thought was, hey, let's do a podcast on Friday to take advantage of the heat
we had this
of Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right, we're going to get that out early because, you know.
Because we're so forward.
People are excited about that movie. And then we have these garbage neighbors who live right underneath us. They have two dogs. And they also have jobs, these two garbage people. And when the garbage people leave to go do their garbage jobs, they leave their dogs home alone, and their dogs go ballistic and are very unhappy. And they bark at everything. They bark at nothing. They howl and cry. They're full of anxiety and upsetitude that they've been left at home alone.
And then I'm sure, you know, and then when the garbage,
and then the garbage people
home,
come home,
they argue, and so that makes the doggies upset too.
Yeah. So we hate the garbage people. We hate their dogs. They're cute dogs, but I've grown to hate them.
Through no fault of their own, the dogs are terrible.
I hate them. And
there's some construction going on in one of the apartments in our building, which meant that people were trooping in and out all day, which meant the dogs were freaking out all day.
We got halfway through the Avengers discussion, and I was like, you know what? No. No one's going to, bless you, no one's going to want to listen to this with dog barking in the background.
We played it back, and there's just this constant undertone of... Like, okay, that's not going to work.
So here we are again.
Yes.
We're starting over. Our time is now. I'm ready to take a chance again.
There you go.
This time we're going to make it.
This time we know it's for real.
And let's talk about a very important film.
Yes.
Iris.
Absolutely. Which I had
thought. You're going to wait. You here for the Avengers? You're going to wait.
We'll get there.
There's a very important film out this weekend called Iris.
Yes.
It's very important.
I thought it was Albert Maysl's last film. It turns out it's his next to last.
Penultimate. Did he finish the last one, though?
According to IMDb, yes.
Okay.
And I think it might even have played at Tribeca this year or something.
I see.
So he has one more movie called In Transit that's coming out. But this is his next to last film, and it's the first film to come out since his passing earlier this year. And it is, you know, if you're thinking, woo, from the director of Grey Gardens and Gimme Shelter, it's not that. It's a sweet movie about an interesting woman, and no lids are being torn off here. It's not that kind of documentary. It's just this sort of portrait of a fascinating figure. Iris Apfel is in her 90s and is still this amazing sort of style icon. She was never a fashion designer. But she and her husband had a very successful interior design firm where they would...
She was an interior designer, and she and her husband had a fabric business.
Well, not just fabric, though, because remember in the movie she goes around to find all those, like, fixtures and things.
Yes.
It started as a fabric business, where they would recreate older textiles and patterns that weren't being created anymore to sort of restore old houses. They wound up doing a lot of work on the White House, starting at the Truman administration. And she, both of them, traveled the world and looked for, you know, fabrics and home furnishings and doodads and whatnots. And over the course of all that, she became one of the world's leading collectors of couture
costume jewelry.
Of doodads and whatnots. Of couture costume jewelry. And she has this really unique personal style where she'll put on like 10 giant wooden brightly colored bracelets and then several, big clunky necklaces and over, a Japanese, monk outfit that she then covers with a big woolly floor length coat and her giant spectacles, and she looks like a million bucks. And is such a style icon that she's one of the few living people to have a show dedicated to them in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute. Why am I recapping this movie? You're the fashion guy.
It's true, I'm fashion.
You are fashion.
I'm super fashion. You can tell by how I dress.
Yes. Well, like Einstein, you have a uniform, so you don't have to think about it too much.
I think by saying that I'm the fashion guy, you're really overselling
You are
my
interested in fashion and
qualifications
you
of this.
follow fashion and you care about fashion, all of which is above me on that scale.
Here's my
You like
stance.
fashion because it's
Why
like
don't you
art.
allow me to speak for
Okay,
myself?
fine.
Man wearing bathrobe.
And that is my fashion.
I'm a huge, as perhaps I'm a big fan of contemporary art. Maybe you've heard about that
You're a next level art bro.
aspect of my personality, Alonzo Durell, the film critic of the Rap,
Who has lived with you for 20 years?
who've
Yes,
lived with
I'm
me for
fully aware.
20 years. My interest in fashion, particularly women's fashion, I don't actually care about men's fashion. It bores me. Women's fashions are interesting to me, though. It's art to me, and I know that's a very particular sort of commercial art, but it's art to me. They wouldn't have shows in museums of clothing if it weren't art. And so,
I went to a natural history museum for an entire exhibition devoted to chocolate.
exactly.
So the museums want to sell tickets these days. So that, I don't know that necessarily. I'm not saying that fashion isn't art.
Chocolate
I just don't know
is
that's your
part of the
criteria.
natural history of the world, though.
Well, okay, fine.
Sip that coffee. So anyway, so my interest in it is more academic than experiential, obviously. Like
Own any pieces?
like what would I do? How would that work? No, what I mean is, I don't, run around to shops and, look at the latest thing. You know what I mean? It's like I'll buy magazines, I'll look at stuff in magazines, I'll look at runway shows on the internet. I have written about fashion in the past, just as a freelancer. Back in the day, when I first started writing for a living, Lori Pike, my old editor at Glue magazine, she used to toss me freelance gigs for a fashion website that she contributed to. And so that was fun, and
This fall, it's all about lizard
yeah.
patterns and sweater capes.
But so that's my interest in it. I don't have any interest in dressing fashionably or stylishly. I have a uniform, and she does. Iris Apfel in the film does discuss the difference between having style and having a uniform. I absolutely have a uniform. Like here's everything I own: two pair of shoes, two pair of pants. One of those is a pair of Levi's 501 jeans. The other is a pair of Dickies work pants. I have a closet. I have a handful of black t-shirts. I have a handful of black t-shirts that have band logos on them. I have a shirt that's white that buttons, and I have a shirt that's black that buttons, and that's
And a green one.
and a dark green one as well that buttons.
Now,
They're all plain.
on the
I have three neckties. They are all plain, and all of them are black.
on the one or two
And
times a year
so
that I have to dress you up for something,
I'm
you
wearing your
manage.
clothes most of the
Well,
time.
that's
Like,
true, I guess.
if you see a photo of me and I'm wearing a jacket and tie, it is Alonzo Durell days
You
for the
have
most part.
that delicious that delicious cashmere chocolate brown blazer.
I do have that. It's a little big on me now, but when I've worn it in the colder months, people want to touch me.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, people want to touch me anyway.
But no, I mean, I'm so not somebody with that much of a sense of style. I pretty much let Brooks Brothers pull me by the nose, and you know, my only.
I'm very good at dressing you.
Like, it's true.
I'm pretty good at helping you select things.
The only sort of big major style decision of my life, apart from, you know, buying the Judd Nelson overcoat when I was in college, was at the age of 40. I decided that by the age of 50, I wanted to dress more like a grown up.
That was a very good idea.
And it's been a steady process. And yes, you know, more button down shirts, fewer T-shirts.
Every time Brooks Brothers or L.L. Bean has a sale, because what we decided when you were 40 was, by the time you're 50, you need to look like Professor Duraldi. That would be the best direction for you to go in. And
apparently I was dressing for the job.
You were dressing for your future job, which is what you wound up doing. So every time they have a sale, you know, we pick up a couple things that, you know, because that stuff's expensive and you just have to, you know,
and you know,
you have to be smart.
Say what you will about Brooks Brothers and L.L. Bean, that stuff is evergreen.
Yeah, yeah. You're never going to look like you're in style, or you're, I'm sorry, or
out of style.
You're never going to look on trend,
right?
Ever, but you're never going to look bad. You're always going to look like someone's father, and I think that's a fine way to go about life.
So anyway, so Iris Apfel, who incidentally I met at the USA Film Festival in Dallas recently. I mean, here's a woman in her 90s, and she is traveling around to promote this film. Like, she is still very active, and you know, she looked like a million bucks and was wearing one of her, you know, signature ensembles, and you know, I just my old boss in Dallas would talk about, like, when people were just insanely sort of matchy-matchy dressed up, like put way too much effort into it. She said, that's not an ensemble. That's an ensemble. So Iris is this just kind of, you know, this woman of a certain age who marches to her own drum. And so the movie subsequently, I think, winds up being less than what you, like what you might expect an Albert Maysles movie to be, and more along the lines of the Joan Rivers documentary, or the Elaine Stritch documentary, or the Carol Channing documentary, or the upcoming Mary Louise Wilson documentary. It's sort of like, look at these women who lived all this time, and they're still busy, and they're still active, and they survived the 20th century, which was not the most hospitable place in the world for women, you know, and they achieved all this stuff, and they have accrued this knowledge along the way, you know, and that's kind of what this movie is, but it's a lot of fun to watch.
I am... If you could place her in history versus where you might place her in the Maysles film history, mm-hmm. I think placed in fashion history, I think she's very much like people like Anna Piaggi, who was an Italian fashion editor who dressed outlandishly, and Isabella Blow, who was also an editor who worked with Alexander McQueen, but whose life was really sad. Like, she suffered from depression and tried to kill herself many times and then succeeded, which apparently sort of influenced Alexander McQueen when he did it. Like, just this just mess, you know. That's just what I read speculatively, but... And people like currently, people like Diane Purnett, the woman who wears the black mantilla everywhere she goes, all these, you know, cool women who don't care about what anyone thinks, and I dig her. I dig what she's about. I like her philosophy of life, which is, you know, being pretty doesn't matter. Looking cool matters.
Right.
And even though, and I was thinking about while I watched it, all those very large bangles and bracelets and stuff that she has on all the time, I thought, They don't do anything. I mean, other than all the, millions of hours of work that you do, like
You don't do anything
in
physical.
your house, there's no. You're not scrambling an egg with those
With those 10 rings on.
giant bracelets on your hands. You're not vacuuming anything. And if I, or you or anyone who, costumed themselves and decorated themselves extravagantly each day,
It would rule out certain other
you would rule out a
activities.
whole lot of physical activities, yeah.
Right. Even though she is wealthy and she has this stuff that she has because of, her global travels, I like the idea of people who have such an eye for this sort of thing that you can be fashionable in a way that isn't dictated by anyone else and
Yeah.
that doesn't require you to be a rich person who buys a bunch of like designer outfits.
Right.
That you could be the kind of person who can go through a thrift store, can go through kind of like a junky jewelry shop and just like pick out these things and mentally catalog and realize, okay, I can get that and it'll go with that other orange thing that I bought last week and then with this person, da da da. I admire that sort of like fashion savantism in a way because it's so away from the dictates of fashion, which I think is what most people don't like about fashion, is that it's these sort of like, well, no, this is where the hem is this year, and if it's not there, then you're, gross, and that sort of business. And
Everyone pretty much is gross.
true, that's a whole other thing. And in a way, I think that while obviously she's a much healthier person and more capable person, Iris in a lot of ways reminded me of Little Edie from Beals's Grey Gardens, in that Edie was somebody who could, look at a tapestry on the wall and figure out that'd be a great cape. And then I'm gonna put this sweater around my head and pin it off with a brooch, and that's the costume for today. And
Yeah.
Iris has her own costume for the day, and it's the stuff that she got because she left her house and saw the world and, experiences things. But they both just have this way of kind of like it's this sort of supervision,
Yeah.
where they can figure out like this, and this, and bam, I look great.
Yeah, the connection I'd say from of this film to something like Grey Gardens is just the resolute nonconformity of its
Yeah.
subject. She just won't do anything that anyone wants her to do. She does exactly as she feels like she should.
Right.
She reminds me of my friend Jennifer from Texas Tech back in Lubbock in the punk rock 80s. We would go to the church thrift store across from campus, and she would buy like these pieces of fabric and she'd use them as curtains on her apartment window, and then 2 days later I'd see her with it wrapped around her head walking to class, and I'd be like, didn't you put that on your window? Isn't that from the thrift store? Did you wash that yet?
She, I recall, also did the tablecloths for our
She
wedding,
did.
which included like a Superman bed sheet and
She
a
and our friend Stephanie both worked
right.
on that stuff. They were both
Stylists.
visual stylists, in Dallas. And so
A Mylar shower curtain, I think, was
yeah,
one
one of
of
yeah, one of
them.
those was that, yeah. But so,
Iris,
I
you should see
Iris,
it.
yes.
Hang on.
Pause.
And we're back.
So, hey jerks, guess what?
I know you're not talking to me when you say
I'm talking to
jerks.
you and all the listeners, all you jerks. Do you jerks like to sit on furniture?
Sure you do.
Or would you rather sit on the dirty, cold floor?
Where all the
It's
magazines
furniture you
are.
like. You like to sit on furniture, nice couches and chairs
Yes.
and stools and things.
And the Ottomans?
Do you know where you get that stuff? You
There.
steal it.
No, you don't.
Other than stealing it, though, do you know where you get that stuff?
You steal furniture and it has bed bugs in it. That's why you don't steal
Yeah, I know.
furniture.
Well, here's what you don't do. You don't go to crappy IKEA because that stuff's going to fall apart
Within a
for
year.
a long, very quickly. The only thing we ever got from
Are
IKEA,
we libeling them now? Is this like, are we
what?
are they gonna, is IKEA gonna
No, we're
sue
editorializing.
us?
We went to IKEA. The best thing we ever got from IKEA was our living room rug.
Yes.
Sturdy, solid rug. Mm-hmm. They can't make that. You can't break a rug.
It's two-dimensional.
Yeah. So, this is an ad that we're doing right now. We have a new sponsor.
We do. Welcome.
This sponsor makes furniture and sells it.
And they are called?
RogerandChris.com. R-O-G-E-R. That's Roger. A-N-D. That's the letter, the word, and. It's a conjunction. And C-H-R-I-S. That's the other person, Chris. RogerandChris.com. The home of the unboring home. No, I'm sorry. Home of the unboring home.
There you go.
Is how they go. These guys make furniture. And they design it. They sell it. It's all online. Everything's beautiful. This is real furniture for grown-up people. You want it to last forever. You sink the money into that kind of thing. You get it. Now, don't simply have couches and chairs that are sort of investment, furniture. They have other products. They have artwork. They have lighting. There's some lamps that I've got my eyes on.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You and the lamps.
You know, I like a lamp. I drive past people's homes. I drive past people's homes at night, and I stare into their open windows. I don't linger, no. But I notice.
Yes.
Who are you people who can live with glaring, ugly, horrible, bright, 150-watt light bulb overhead stuff?
Miss Streisand here does not like the overhead.
Interrogating you and your every move. Who lives like that? Who likes that?
You're going to wind up like Mae West with an apartment full of lamps that all have like 75-watt pink bulbs in them so that no one can really see anything.
Wrong! What I am going to have is a perfectly lighted home.
Okay.
With table lamps and those nice stand-up lamps that are on the floor. Floor lamps, I believe they're called.
I
believe that's the lamp terminology.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a lot of table lamps in this apartment.
It's true.
I refuse. We have a light fixture over our head right now that we are sitting under. There are no light bulbs in it. I have taken them out. I have removed them. It is forbidden to use it as a light fixture. And that is because I just can't stand that thing happening over my head.
But RogerandChris.com have your lamp needs in mind.
Really nice lamps. Some of them handmade by Chris himself.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but they've got pillows, they've got hardware, they've got all kinds of stuff for your house. And it's at various price points. And as the weeks go on and we keep doing ads for them, I'm going to talk about my favorite products on this website.
Here's the thing. You get out of college and you buy that futon or whatever, but at some point you're ready for real grown-up furniture.
Yes.
And when that time comes, you might want to sink a little more into it than you did into that futon. You know? Like, it's like you buy those Gap outfits.
Well, you better. You're just going to keep buying a futon over and over.
I remember the moment where...
Because you know you're going to sex that thing until it breaks.
I remember, the moment
I'm going to guess that you can sex on these couches all you like and they won't break.
It's not mentioned at RogerandChris.com, but I suspect that's
implicit. I bet you can do it.
In their guarantee.
Yeah.
I remember the moment of my life in which I stopped buying clothes. Remember Structure?
Oh, God.
I stopped buying clothes at Structure.
Do I remember Structure?
Started buying, man suits. And it cost more money, but those suits lasted and lasted and lasted. I had a Calvin Klein suit that I'd still be wearing now if I weren't so fat.
Let me tell you, okay, Structure was this awful store. That you had a store credit card for.
If the Gap had had credit cards back then, I would have had that instead.
I don't know why you had a Structure credit card, but boy, did you like using it. And I remember a couple times, this was in the first couple of years that we knew each other, you would go off alone.
It was before you had become my personal fashion
to
dictator.
Shop. And the things that you would come back with, like I would come to your apartment, you'd be like, look what I got at Structure today. And I would say to you, oh. Those three-quarter length shorts that you purchased sure are a nice color of salmon.
You're never going to let those go, are you?
Where will you put those on and go to? Alone.
It was the 90s.
Where's that going to happen without me?
Anyway, RogerandChris.com, we thank you for your support. Go check out their website. Their furniture is gorgeous. They're not so bad either. And it's, you know, you'll want to check
it out. Oh, yeah, these dudes are giants. Yeah. Like, I know Chris. This is how this all came to happen.
And Roger, you've seen on television.
Roger, that's Roger Hazard. He used to be on Sell This House, and he's got a web series now called Roger That. And Chris is his husband. And I've been to medieval times with Chris.
Well, you never took me to medieval times.
Would you like to go? Maybe that could be your birthday present.
Maybe not as my birthday present.
It was his birthday present. That's why we were there.
I would maybe be interested in going to medieval times.
For your birthday.
No, not for
Let's have our friends go to medieval times.
I'm not making anybody else go to medieval times.
They're going to like it. If they've never been. Look, if you've never been to medieval times, you need to go to medieval times. Because it's a trip. And it's a wholesome evening out of jousting and falconry for the entire family.
Will there be utensils?
I think you're aware that there were no utensils in medieval times. Hence, there are no utensils at medieval times.
But they had Pepsi.
They got Pepsi. But yes, RogerandChris.com. You're going to go there and buy things. And if you do go there and buy something, anything, like I said, there's all kinds of stuff. Figure out a way to tell them that we sent you. So they know how far our tentacles reach.
Right, how we are driving them crazy
into the world of furniture designs.
Right. They didn't give us our own little URL or anything?
No, they should give us our little code. We should have a code.
Yeah. We'll work on that. We got a few more of these spots to go. So anyway, thanks guys. We appreciate it.
There's a cute doggy on the main page. Oh, doggy. So you should go at least and look at the cute doggy.
Totally. Yeah. All right, Avengers Age of Ultron. It's the thing. It's the movie that ate this weekend.
Don't pretend you're not excited about Avengers.
I did not like it as much as the first Avengers. Which is not to say that I didn't like it and that I didn't have fun.
I have an idea.
Shoot.
Let's not talk about the plot of this movie at all.
Okay.
Here's why. People are going to go see it anyway. They don't care.
And there might be some spoilers, but I don't know.
Secondly, I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. Other than that, Ultron is the thing that gets made.
Ultron is created by Tony Stark to be to defend the world from any future alien invasions, and instead winds up turning on its creator and deciding that the best way to ensure world peace is to do something about all that pesky humanity. Which, as Dave pointed out, basically this is the Osama bin Laden story. You know, you prop someone up to fight a war on your behalf, and then oops, they turn on you.
Yeah. So then the Avengers have to come along.
Right.
The Avengers plus.
A couple other people.
So Avengers plus. New Avengers.
A couple of new characters, and then like every sidekick who's popped up in the last 10 or so Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Not counting Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Although, well, anyway.
That's another story.
That's a future story.
Right.
Here are the things I think about the Avengers. First of all, I had a very good time.
Okay.
I look at this genre of film as serving one purpose in my life. And that is to make me feel like I am 9 years old again at a Saturday kid movie matinee. That was always a great time for me. And I liked going to those films. I liked the excitement of those movies. I believe on a very real level that these are children's movies for adults. And I don't think that's a bad thing. The world of cinema is deep and wide and can accommodate gigantic, bloated corporate filmmaking like this. Because of that, what I need from these movies is not necessarily sensation, but a sense of wholeness. And I think that Joss Whedon provides that. I think that he balances the demands of sensation with human stuff. Now, he's laid the groundwork in the first Avengers film by making these people feel very much like, a sort of bickery group of friends slash family.
Co-workers.
Yeah. And very much like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, going all the way back to Roseanne, which was his first TV writing job, that mix of warmth
Prickliness.
and prickliness, which I really like. In this installment, we get a little bit less of that, I think, than we got in the first one.
Yeah.
And I think it's simply for a couple of reasons, like the demands of franchise building and including all the seeds of future films,
Right.
crowded out a little bit of that.
For
But
me,
also because
it crowded out a lot of
we
that.
know these people already quite a bit. And so I think they felt comfortable
Not having to reintroduce
not having to
them.
reintroduce them. Yeah.
Granted,
There's a lot of tics and personality quirks that are given a very quick sort of cursory
Reference.
yeah. But that's okay. I'm okay with that. I felt like it was still like a whole package, and it wasn't difficult to follow. It didn't go off into so many crazy directions that I couldn't follow it, which does happen sometimes in these films that
Sure.
are very overstuffed. And I think that it did the other thing that I want it to do is make me excited for the next time I see these people.
I think it's a testament to Joss Whedon that this movie works as well as it does, given how overstuffed it is with incident and character and, franchise empire building in terms of, kind of ticking off the list of everybody we've seen in these previous movies and letting us know who we're going to see in the next ones. I did have fun, and I did, I wound up seeing it twice actually before, doing What the Flick in this review just to kind of confirm my thoughts about the first time. But my thoughts of the first time were pretty much confirmed, which is that this movie is not as fun as the first one because it does get overwhelmed by all of those factors. The first movie, to me, really felt like Joss Whedon got comic books in a way that so many filmmakers don't, and really kind of balanced the banter and the larger than life, action stuff, and it moved along at a brisk clip, and it never felt like I was watching a 2.5 hour movie. This one, it feels more weighted down. You can tell he's frantically still trying to keep all those plates spinning, and he does pull it off, and he does succeed for the most part, but at the end of it all, it's just not as much fun. The first one felt like, hey, I get to put all these characters together and it's so fun, and I'm going to see how they interact, and this is a great opportunity. And this one felt like, I have to make sure this is covered and this and this and this, and I got to make the donuts, and it was less fun for me. So, I mean, I think that people who go, for the most part, if they like the first one, they'll get the same bits of pleasure out of this one, but not as many. And I think, and they'll feel a sense of, this is now just this cog in the giant Marvel Disney machine of, we had 10 movies before, we got another 20 coming up, and we're just going to be the connective tissue to get you from phase two to phase three or whatever the heck it's called,
I believe that we've entered a phase of corporate filmmaking that is sort of unprecedented, where now we have the company, making grand announcements
Right.
about, future products that are
Well,
coming our way.
they're treating it like television. It's like
And
the directors and even the writers aren't necessarily as powerful as the producer
yeah.
who is sort of mapping out this whole giant thing. And you look at Edgar Wright, who tried to sort of do something quirky and different with Ant-Man, and they're like, yeah, no. And they sent him packing because they needed Ant-Man to fit in a certain place in this large, sprawling,
Right.
map of the cosmos that they're creating.
That will, diminish individual sort of idiosyncratic filmmaking. And that is a problem. But what I am most, interested in the long term is how will we see these films, 20 years from now? And I wonder, because they have now already, and we're kind of getting rolling here. This is what, the 10th or 11th Marvel film that's, and they're all sort of interconnected, or they're going to at least become more interconnected as time goes on. This is, they're empire building, and they've already so successfully sold their audience on participating in this empire building that when at the press screening the Marvel logo showed up on screen, people hooted and hollered and cheered. And every time that happens, it's not the first time that's happened. It's happened in the past too. But every time that happens, I silently sit there and I think to myself, the corporation does not love you back. It has no feelings for you at all. It does. You are not a thing. You they don't. They're just taking all of your everything. They're not going to give you anything.
I think of Joel McHale on The Soup. Think about what you're clapping for.
Yeah, and that's weird to me. But it also makes me wonder that if in the future, the kids who saw this, who the kids who participated in this, the kids for whom this was simply how movies
Came out.
came out and got to you, what are they going to expect as adults from, entertainment? And what are they going to expect from film? I am curious as to how film history will treat these movies. Because we have not only democratized film criticism right now with the internet, we're about to democratize film history in that we now have, revival houses, at least here in Los Angeles, that very happily, and I'm happy for them too. I don't think there's a problem with this at all. Will show you something such as Three Ninjas Kick Back at midnight on a Saturday night, and you've got people in their 20s now going to see this because they saw it when they were children. And are we going to enshrine junky product as classic film
Well, I mean, come on. When we were
by doing this sort of thing? Is this going to happen long term?
When we were in high school, midnight movies were mainly designed just to entertain stoners, and that's what they still are. It's just that what stoners want to see now are the movies that they watched on
I
HBO when they
understand
were
that,
eight.
but are we going to give, schlocky product? I'm not saying Avengers is like Three Ninjas Kick Back,
No.
but do let me be perfectly clear about that. But what I'm saying is, will we place these films properly as popcorn movies that were absolutely emblematic of the time? Because honestly, Ultron is just about terrorism, and these films are a reaction to
Well, yeah,
terrorism.
The Winter Soldier was all about the NSA,
Yeah.
and
The are we going to take these what are essentially popcorn movies, and are we going to give them a status that they only earned because of their popularity?
I don't think so. I think they're an organized, codified set of popcorn movies, but that doesn't make them different from any other hit of any other era. And ultimately, sort of history decides, well, this movie that was a big hit, we still respond to, and then maybe that other one, not so much. People still watch Gone with the Wind, even though it raises a lot of red flags for
For
certain audience members.
everyone. Yeah, certain audience members, people who understand the world.
Right, yes. But who watches Around the World in 80 Days anymore, except for when it occasionally pops up on TCM? It's
You
just,
do.
I don't. I've never seen it, actually.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of It's a Mad, Mad, Mad,
Right. No, that's different. Totally different. But no, I think that's how this stuff always works, and even among the high, you know, art of film, you know, I think you see these kind of waves where Bergman's really hot, and then he's not really,
and then not so
well
much
regarded,
anymore.
And then he comes back again, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think that they're rewriting film history in a way. I don't think the people who are growing up in these movies, it's any different from the people who grew up watching the Transformers cartoon and now want to see the big stupid live action movies. I mean, yes, I'd say post boomer. The idea of the things that you enjoyed as a child then becoming your adult entertainment.
More than that, more than just that your adult entertainment, valuable and worthy to be, you know, written about in a serious way. And
but no one's writing about Three Ninjas and Mega Man.
That was a bad example.
Okay, but or about, you know, just one of the guys or whatever, you know, Monster Squad. Yeah. I think these movies are appreciated within the
you
level,
you think they're
of
being
the,
appreciated appropriately, and they're not going to become something more than what
they're
really.
They're
are.
Not. They're not part of canon.
All right, all right. I believe you.
I mean,
I just I've there been are some recently the past few years the whole idea of poptimism, which
sure
is, and in the past few weeks there've been more than a few of those come up with regard to Furious 7 and now to this.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, you know, there depending on how you what you feel about the works of Steven Spielberg, certainly there's
yes.
a way to. You know,
yeah.
So yeah, I see your point, but I don't think that this is gonna paradigm shift. You know, just because these movies are really popular and because they happen to be a set of them in a row that are all, you know, interconnected.
A lot of this has to do with I listen a lot to. I have a lot of conversations with James, our friend and fellow film critic James Rocky, and more than anyone I know, his approach to these. To particularly to the Avengers, is sort of like warning, like this is like you're headed for the rocks, you know, like and as much as I legitimately enjoy the Avengers films, I've always got my ear to James.
No, I like what James says about the anticipation industrial complex,
yeah.
where the movies aren't even so much about the movies as much as getting you excited about the next movie. So
it feels like there's a danger in that.
Yeah.
And when I hear him talk about it, I think. You have a point.
No, absolutely.
You have more than one point. You have a legitimate
there's a
sort
certain,
of warning that you're trying to yell at people.
There is
you
a
know?
Certain chasing the dragon element to these
yes.
movies where you want it to hit all your buttons in a certain way, and then at the end of it, it's like, oh, the Avengers will be back. Ah, then
yeah.
there's that to look forward to. Maybe that one will be the one, you know. So, but, you know, I'm not on the soapbox against the Marvel movies yet. And it'll be interesting to see, really, how DC counters this. Because they're trying to, you know, they've
by becoming even more grim.
Well, that's the thing. But,
yeah.
but I mean, in terms of, like, they've also got their own long-term schedule in play, and they're
yeah.
trying to make these movies all connect. But so far, you know, given what we've seen from Zack Snyder and that trailer that's out for Batman vs. Superman, there's not a lot of encouragement there, but who knows? I don't know.
Right, now, you also saw something else.
Oh, I saw Welcome to Me.
Which I did not see.
Yes.
I saw the 15 minutes of it
right.
when you were watching it on your
screener.
Your screener, and then the sound kept doing weird stuff, and so
yeah.
I gave up.
By the way, we will talk about Far From the Madding Crowd next week, because Dave hasn't had a chance to
see it. I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
I review it this week on What the Flick with Christy Lemire, but next week Dave and I will talk about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Welcome to Me stars Kristen Wiig as a woman with personality disorder, and she lives in a crappy little apartment in the desert, and the TV is always on, and she has stacks and stacks of VHS cassettes of old Oprah episodes that she can recite by heart. And she also happens to play the lottery, and one day she wins the $86 million jackpot and decides that the thing that she wants to do with her money is to have her own talk show just like Oprah. Except she doesn't want guests. It's just going to be her talking about her, all about her. The show is called Welcome to Me, and she wants to enter on a swan. And it gets more and more ornate and complicated, but, you know, ultimately it's just her kind of airing her petty grievances and talking about her view of the world. And there's the makings of an interesting satire here about sort of toxic media age narcissism and people who want to live their lives on camera. But this is one of those kind of wimpy movies.
Like where you on What the Flick.
It, totally. Yes. That's, I must be on the camera all the time.
It's pretty clear.
Obviously. This is one of those movies that wants to be kind of biting and satirical and bilious, but then like really dial it back suddenly and have hugs all around and let's all learn a lesson. And that just drives me batty. I wish movies had the courage of their conviction. I like Kristen Wiig a lot in this. She really kind of goes for it. And I admire the fact that, you know, you starring in a hit like Bridesmaids, there's then this sort of map that always gets laid out for you where, you know, she could have been Will Ferrell, you know? She could have been, yes. She could have made like 10 of the same movies
right.
with diminishing returns.
Yes.
And instead, she has, I think, really gone out of her way to pick these really idiosyncratic characters, these messed up, complicated women to play. The movies aren't always that great. I liked Skeleton Twins more than you did. I really hated Girl Most Likely. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
Nope.
Ugh, the worst. But she's always good. I mean, she's...
the worst.
The movie was dreadful, but she...
you! Where'd you get that hat?
Those shoes. Oh, they're terrible. But Kristen Wiig is always good, and she's always committed and trying to do something interesting. And this is one of those movies where even, like, every tiny role is played by, you know, somebody like Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Because right.
the director, Shira Piven, is Jeremy Piven's sister and the wife of Adam McKay.
Yes.
Speaking of Will Ferrell. So James Marsden and Wes Bentley and Joan Cusack and Tim Robbins and Loretta Devine and Rose Abdu and
Rose Abdu.
Yay, and Thomas Mann and all these people.
She's somebody we need to have on this show.
We should. We
oh, drag totally. Rose on here someday.
Yeah. So it's... don't bother.
Can I tell you, every time I see Wes Bentley now...
You're just happy that he's...
I just have
standing
to,
up.
Yeah, every time I see Wes Bentley in a movie now, I just think, oh, good, you're not strung out on heroin anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that for a while, there was a while there where he would pop up in a movie every once in a while, and it was always terrible. And I would watch the movie and think, what's going on with Wes Bentley? Why is there... A, why is he not in anything anymore?
Right.
B, why is he in garbage when he is in something? And C, there's just... What's going? How? Who?
There's a weird American Beauty curse between him and Thora Birch and
well, Thora Birch.
Well, yeah, I know that's a whole
her
other,
father.
That's a whole other weird
her father
story.
Manager.
Yes,
weird dude guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then what's her face? Why do I always forget her name? Baby Dina Merrill. You know, the naked girl with the rose petals on her.
Baby Dina Merrill. No, I'll never remember her name. Mina Suvari.
Mina Suvari. Like, the three of them, I think after that movie, we thought, oh, well, these three kids are going to run the town,
yeah.
You know, and boo, not so much.
Yeah,
Wes Bentley.
He got on some super drugs.
Went down the stony end, but he came back, which is nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah. This is just a really irritating film. Linda Carlini's in it, too. I do not.
Avengers.
And she's in Avengers too. Yeah, busy weekend for her. I do not recommend Welcome to Me. It's annoying.
Got a DVD pick?
I do, because Iris reminded me so much about how, you know, people who are living these active, great, creative lives, you know, at an advanced age, I think of as being really inspirational. My DVD pick this week is The Beaches of Agnes.
Nice.
Which is Agnes Varda's documentary about her own life. She sort of traces it through the beaches where she's lived, including Los Angeles, when she and her husband Jacques Demy were in L.A. making films here for a while. An extraordinary movie about a really amazing filmmaker, one of the last survivors of the French New Wave. We were talking about this the other day. Actually, I was at a dinner with some faculty from Chapman, and the only ones left are her and Godard. but yeah, she's just lived this amazing life, and the movie really captures it beautifully. And you just think, wow, I want to still be that vital when I'm you know, past 80.
Convoy.
Okay. Because Sam Peckinpah really needed to make movies based on one-hit wonder hit singles.
You don't badmouth this movie.
All right.
My dad took me to see Convoy in Roswell, New Mexico, at the Plains Theater downtown, which is now the UFO Museum. Or at least it was last time I checked. It's Kris Kristofferson
right.
is in it. He's great. Ally McGraw is in it. She's great.
How many times do you have to listen to that song?
I don't remember.
C.W. McCall.
But they're battling Ernest Borgnine as the mean sheriff.
Was this post-Smoking the Bandit?
This is right at that time.
Yeah, the whole CB radio trucker cinema.
Yeah. And so, the good guys, the truckers, they're against the bad sheriff man. Right. And they got a convoy. Nothing going to get in their way.
Nope. I've always had my favorite of
it's pretty great.
Of the CB radio.
You don't have to, you know. Here I know I just talked about Three Ninjas Kickback, but as a, you know, example of let's not resurrect, you know, childhood, things that are terrible, but I'm still kind of into Convoy.
Well, you know, it's funny.
I don't know if I'm going to defend it against to anybody, but you know, Sam Peckinpah.
Yeah. My favorite bit of CB radio cinema is still Jonathan Demme's Handle with Care, but you know.
Yeah.
Convoy's good, too. It's funny that you mentioned that whole thing. I remember I got a birthday card from my brother Fernando, who has been on this show, when I turned 18 or 19 or 20, you know, one of those birthdays. And he said something like, you know...
Don't become a homosexual.
Yes. No. He didn't say that. But he said something about, you know, how it was time to, you know, get serious about, you know, school or whatever, and to put away the comic books. And I thought,
did he really say
yeah.
that?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, I'm of the generation that never put away the comic books.
That's true.
And we got that because of the boomers, frankly. I think that they were the ones who originally sort of made it safe to wallow
put away
in nostalgia.
The comic books.
They made it safe to wallow in nostalgia for the rest of your life. So, still got the comic books, Fernando, sorry.
I'm going to shake his hand next time I see him. Tell him, you tried.
Mama tried.
You tried.
Letters.
This is from Turner. Hey guys, so I wrote you about 6 weeks ago, and then I promptly chickened out at the prospect of hearing my words read on the air. And until my husband made me play it for him, didn't realize that you had noticed the connection with my name. And a certain film with Oscar winner Tom Hanks. To set the stage, IMDb says that Turner and Hooch came out in the summer of 1989. And as an aside, the director, Roger Spottiswood, also has on his resume the similarly comedic cop two-hander Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Uh-huh.
And also HBO's And the Band Played On.
He's a Renaissance man.
Because if ever a director's CV was perfectly suited for that subject matter. So at the release of that fine film, I would have been about 11. You may recall middle school-aged boys are approximately the worst people in the world. And so that was something I endured for the next few years.
Sorry if we called back bad memories.
Several years, this show should come with a trigger warning. Several years of intense psychological therapy and medication, and I can only allow myself to think briefly of the movie's existence. Although my family is under strict orders to refer to it only as that Tom Hanks movie with the dog. There was also a brief issue with Tina Turner, but she kicks butt, so that's no thing. In any case, hope that that's at least given you a few laughs, and hope that when the new fest gets around to announcing its slate, you might be presenting a few films.
I have not in the past, but you never know.
And now off to see Age of Ultron. That's from Turner.
Turner, for what it's worth, Turner is the cop in that movie. So let's just be clear about that.
Okay, sure.
Well, Turner, the Hooch is the dog.
I know. I know cinema things.
Well, you give me the blank stare like I'm not saying something right on.
This is from Chuck.
Okay.
Please post more to YouTube.
Yes, Chuck.
I am running out. I do not like reruns. I must consume more. Warm regards, Chuck. Please explain what he means.
Tell people
who don't know what he's talking about.
I have been uploading our old episodes, like our oldest episodes.
The old ones, when we were young people.
Yes, when we were on the Dumont Network. Onto YouTube, and I have not done so lately, but I will get a few happening. There are other places online to find our old episodes. They're not just on YouTube. I'm just trying to make it easier for you, and I guess easy is what Chuck wants, so easy is what Chuck will get. I will post more episodes on YouTube. I'm sorry I've fallen back on that.
Hey, what's going on? Why did all the letters just go away and get lost?
What's done now?
Hang on. It's taking up. It's a thing that's going to happen. They're going to come back.
It's a horrible thing that your AOL account is doing.
This is from Robbie. Hey, Alonso Duralde and Dave White.
Hey.
In your most recent podcast, Dave briefly mentioned Splice in discussion of the Lazarus effect. Oh, listen, the dogs have begun barking.
Oh, yippee.
Good thing we're almost done.
Woo!
I was instantly reminded of one of my favorite movie-going experiences, which happens to take place at the Mission Tiki Drive-In in Montclair, California. I was with a large group of friends that had gathered for a friend's birthday, and the double feature was Get Him to the Greek and Splice.
Wow.
That's a good double feature.
Yeah.
Splice is dope. After the Get Him to the Greek, I wasn't paying much attention to Splice, so later I went to nap in the back seat of my friend's car. What I'm about to say counts as a spoiler for Splice, but in the way of Dave White, I consider it a selling point. I wake up to my friends yelling in bewilderment at the screen as the mutant alien creature is seduced by Adrian Brody, has a sex change, and just before the credits, impregnates Sarah Polly. It is then that I fell in love with this drive-in. Thank you for your wonderful podcast, Robbie.
Mission Tiki, it's great.
Oh, yes.
Try the carne asada nachos. Ask for Babs. Visit Abu Dhabi.
That is the letter that I read last week. And this,
yet you have not deleted it.
Is a letter from Paula. Hello, Paula. She writes, hi, guys. Love what you do. My summer double feature suggestion. Barbarella and Zardoz.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that.
They have quite a bit in common, she says.
Lots of loincloths. Barbarella and Danger Diabolic, I think, would be a lot of fun, too.
Danger Diabolic would be good.
They share some sets.
Do they really?
Yeah, they were both Dino De Laurentiis productions.
Oh.
And they both star John Philip Law.
That's crazy. That is a letter that I read last week as well. I don't know why these keep popping up.
I don't either.
My email does this weird thing now where...
Can you not like make a folder where these letters can live?
Tell me about things.
You're the worst.
I simply cannot know about things, okay? So just relax. This is from Jim. Have you heard the projection booth episode about the Apple?
Yes, I did, actually.
It features interviews with Catherine Mary Stewart, Menachem Golan, Joss Ackland, sorry, no George Gilmore.
Yes, alas.
He gives the link.
No, he sent it to me, and I looked it up, and it's a great episode. We'll post a link on the Linoleum Knife page.
Also, since you mentioned the dire after last season, you might enjoy this piece I wrote about it, featuring interviews with three of the actors. Jason Koulos, the male lead, really opened up. And he's a link to that.
We'll post that.
I realized that after last season is unwatchable, but I was kind of obsessed with it for a while. I'm still obsessed with it.
Yeah, I want to show it to my students one of these days.
I think it might be a waste of time. Because no one who goes through Chapman's film program is going to make a movie as bonkers and outsider as that. You know
Right.
what I mean?
Well, what I was thinking was the idea of that you don't, there's certain things in movies that you don't notice until they're not there. You take things like lighting for granted until you see
Well,
people casting giant shadows, you know.
This is from Ralph. Ralph says, "Hey guys, here's the requested top 10, and while I think the two of you are geniuses, I
Woo.
certainly don't need your validation of my aesthetic to know that my taste in film is superior."
Well,
It's your show, though, so knife away. Oh, we're gonna.
oh, yeah, buckle up.
Let's get him. Wetlands.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had this much fun watching a movie in a long time. Critics sometimes describe an actress's performance as brave. The leading lady here has raised the bar exponentially.
Yeah, it's a fair cop.
The Last Picture Show.
Sure.
My mom took me to see this when I was 11.
Wow.
It made an indelible impression. I've been a fan of black and white movies since. The Last Picture Show is one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bogdanovich, we'll be recording our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode about What's Up, Doc? Soon, and we'll let you know when that becomes available.
Opera, my favorite Dario Argento.
Haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that one.
Bibbs is a fan, I know.
Yeah. Okay, Ralph. You and me are friends. We're friends now. I just quickly glanced over the rest of your
Oh,
list.
I see. I say, what are you talking about?
And the one I'm about to read next means that you and me we're tight. We're tight bros.
Which is
Those Who Love Me Can Take the Train.
Which I still haven't seen.
It's one of the best films of the past, like 20 years.
I know, I need to get to it. I just haven't seen it.
It's from Patrice Chéreau. It's from late 90s, 1999, 98. The friends of a guy who just died. They all take a train from Paris to Limoges, where he's going to be buried. And a destination funeral.
Oh, well, those are always fun.
So, yeah, it's just
You can hit the China outlet shops
it's so
afterwards.
great. The Skin I Live In,
Ooh, yeah.
which he describes as wonderfully perverse. Passion Fish,
Oh, I love that movie.
so thoughtful and well written. Alfre Woodard and Mary McDonnell give incredible performances.
I wasn't expecting the anal probe. I wasn't expecting the anal probe. I wasn't expecting the anal probe.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Still haven't seen it because I love the book so much. I'm still gun shy about watching that movie. I know it's a classic and I need to see it, but I just, you
I
know.
got to see this in a small rep house in Paris where it was retitled The Silence in the Shadows. I have no idea why. That's what he says. Gypsy. When Natalie Wood slipped into that blue gown and those long white gloves, I knew I was gay. That's what he says.
It's okay. It's one of those musicals with too many people in it who don't really sing.
I've never seen Gypsy.
It's okay.
Beau Travail.
Oh, he's got your number.
Another masterpiece. He calls it eye candy, which it is. I mean, it is that in many, many different ways. But it's incredible. Listeners, go get Beau Travail, watch that, and Those Who Love Me Can Take the Train. Just get out there and get on that. Finally, Stop Making Sense.
Oh, well, yeah.
Then he says, "Thanks for all your hard work. It can't be easy to put a podcast as good as yours together week after week." That's true. It's a lot of work.
Labor intensive.
I'm really, really. I have to rest the entire day after we're finished with each episode.
The insights have taken it out of you.
I give a lot, and I don't think people really understand the nature of my struggle.
Your conf.
Yes, mein Kampf, if you will. The weather here is getting warmer, and I'm in a better mood these days, so that compliment is probably due to this situation. Thank you very much, Ralph. You're 100% knife.
Yes, despite that comment about being superior.
No, he didn't say he was superior to us. He just said he didn't need us
I see.
to tell him if he was superior or not. He knows he's superior. For example, ain't nobody need to tell me that I got amazing taste in everything. I know this to be a fact. If you want to praise me for it, I'll let you. I find it nice to hear. I like hearing praise from people about all aspects of me, my life, and my personality, my tastes, my intelligence, my sexy body. Whatever you want to praise, go on ahead, do that thing. But I don't need it. It's a welcome addition to my day.
I don't like you.
What else do we got here?
You tell me.
That's all the letters that I think I have at the
All right.
moment.
Well, let's wrap this puppy up then. A quick reminder, we do have a new one coming soon, but in the meantime, you can pick up any of our previous Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes for $1.99 a piece. Just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Those previous episodes include The Poseidon Adventure, Clue, The Apple, Two for the Road, and Josie and the Pussycats, plus our Christmas favorites, White Christmas and the Mexican Santa Claus. Check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the Schmoes Know and the B Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, the Canon, Malton on Movies, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash. Oh, sorry, no, Pod Crash stopped happening. The Game Night Guys and Secretly Timid and
Make yourself
a
a
new
new
list.
list.
I know.
Throw that list out. A fresh new piece of paper.
Not
that old envelope from
you're
Bank
the,
of America.
You're the one who doesn't know how to read emails, so don't get on me about this. Bret Easton Ellis tweeted this week that his podcast will be back next week.
Oh, okay.
So hooray for that. So do check out his podcast. It's a lot of fun. If you missed the episode I was on, I had a great time talking to him, so check it out. Well, I always want to thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can find out more about his wonderful work at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA.
Yeah, not old British boy band Blue.
No. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review there, that would help tremendously. It really does help point eyes and ears toward the show. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com, and there's a way to give us a little thumbs up there as well. There's also an app for streaming us on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Please go there and like us. It does help a lot in finding new sponsors. You can follow us at Twitter at LinoleumCast, and again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and join our Linoleum Knife Facebook group page where our fans gather to talk about movies.
Do you know who I am on Twitter?
You are at D. Leland White, and I am at A. Duraldi. And again, we want to thank our sponsors, Roger and Chris, for their support of the program. And we will see you next time in a world with not so many Avengers in it.
You know, there's an armchair on RogerandChris.com that I'm super into. It's the Basel, Basel. Sort of an English, traditional English kind of roll arm kind of chair. I think it would look really nice in this apartment.
Where? Where would we have an armchair?
In like one of the bedrooms. Yeah.
I'm
It'd be great.
I'm not
We're sitting here
questioning.
reading some books
I'm not
in a nice
questioning. I'm not
armchair.
questioning the loveliness of the chair. I just don't know that we have
They
room
would
for
look
it.
really nice in here. Like there's so much sort of, contemporary mixed with like
Okay.
mid-century stuff going on here, and I think a little
This
traditional
is a
English thing would look
fascinating
nice too.
conversation that
What
we
I'm
should
saying,
totally be having
what I'm
offline.
saying, is that Santa Claus, Christmas is in. It's right around the corner. What month is this? Is it October or November? Right now, like yeah, it's soon. And so I think you need to think about how you can please me with furniture from RogerandChris.com.
I am already hand selecting the pieces of coal that will be going in your socket.
Whoa.
Get us out of here.
Have a, I'm sorry. Do you have any more Yakov Smirnoff jokes
Can
too
we
while you're at
please
it?
end this episode?
When I'm good and ready, is when this episode is
Before I
going
end
to
you,
be.
end him.
Goodbye.